another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when it has finally been confirmed there will be action taken before the end of the month. And that is extraordinarily important to simply clear away some of the homeless encampments that are endangering the safety of commuters, motorists, ordinary citizens very directly right here in downtown Seattle. I mean, it is an unbelievable situation. We covered it yesterday. And one of the reasons I was feeling so basically apprehensive about the entire thing and got fairly emotional about it is because, like everybody else who lives in this area, I am directly affected. So are you, whoever you are. You're directly affected. Because if they are have more than 200 incidents so far this year of rock throwing, propane tank throwing, bicycle throwing, cinder block throwing, and damaging cars on the freeway from homeless encampments, if that is going on, it could be your car. It could be you. And yesterday, right after the show, I had a doctor's appointment. And I go down to one of the hospitals on First Hill. And by the way, everything fine. I have a very successful doctor's appointment. And I made it without getting my car pelted with any kind of brickbats or stones or anything like that coming this way. But there are a bunch of other people who weren't so lucky. One of the Cairo 7 says in a report that around 4 p.m., that is exactly when I was going to my appointment, troopers responded to reports of rocks and debris being thrown on cars on westbound Interstate 90 near Rainier Avenue, which is kind of exactly where I was. I didn't see it, thank goodness. But Trooper Rick Johnson said 7 cars were struck. Now, this is unbelievable. This was getting intense coverage yesterday. And then yesterday afternoon, the wonderful and sympathetic and compassionate and lovely and innocent and deserving of just endless, endless, endless public assistance, people who are camped in these filthy, disgusting, instant slums that are created. And by the way, part of what we're talking about here is one of these homeless camps they're talking about is right next to this new multi-gazillion dollar light rail they're building. And you all know how I feel about the light rail. It's the most gigantic and foolish waste of money imaginable. But at least they're trying with all of this money being spent. And I believe that it was about $100,000 per yard for building the light rail. This is just unbelievably expensive, literally billions of dollars. And they have some pretty nice architectural work and some planting, and all of that is there with the light rail right next to the most squalid, filthy homeless encampment you can imagine, where they get all of this stuff that they're going to throw at commuters very easily because they have gigantic piles. They have Mount Rainier's height of garbage. And it's there. You see it every day. Nobody does a damn thing about it. At about 4 p.m., troopers responded to reports of rocks and debris being thrown on cars on westbound Interstate 90 near Rainier Avenue. Trooper Rick Johnson said 7 cars were struck. Investigators told Cairo 7 2 people whose car was hit got out of their car and chased the suspect down. This is fanfare for the common man. Hooray for them. The two people then came across an on-duty trooper who was working on a different case. Troopers said the two people identified the suspect, who was taken into custody. He was a 41-year-old Seattle man who they believe is responsible. We're not going to treat this as the end of it. we're not going to celebrate in any way, shape, or form that we've solved this. We're going to continue our patrol, said Trooper Chase Van Cleve. We're going to continue the emphasis until we know the people driving on these roadways are safe. Well, the only way to achieve that is to clear out the encampments, and they reach that conclusion later. Here are two local clips about what this situation has come to. First, from Cairo 7, clip 14.
Arrested another person for throwing debris onto I-90. Seven cars were damaged, bringing the total number of reported incidents in King County to a whopping 209.
Yeah, five just in the last couple of weeks. This last one taking place just 2 hours ago over here. Get this. He was actually chased down by one of the drivers whose car was hit by the debris. Washington State Patrol says they started receiving call after call that there was someone throwing debris into westbound traffic on I-90. Now, in total, seven cars were damaged. Thankfully, no one was injured. Here's where it gets crazy, though. We're told two people got out of one of those cars that had been hit and chased the person down. A short while later, they came across an on-duty trooper who was working on a different case. They were then able to point out that suspect, and the trooper was able to make an arrest. Now, they haven't released that person's name, but WSP says he is a 31-year-old man from Seattle. WSP says this is a big step in bringing this behavior to an end. Still, they don't think it's over. This area in particular has been a hot spot for debris throwing, and many of the incidents have been tied to nearby homeless encampments.
Can you imagine such a thing? Well, first of all, that's where you'd find the debris that you want to throw, if that's what you're motivated to do. And then there is this, and this includes some very good, very encouraging news. This from, it's clip 66. It's from our local Fox affiliate, Q13. Listen.
This case stand out is that it happened at 4 p.m., a time of day when these roads are packed. Many prior incidents have taken place in the dead of night. Officials say it's clear the suspect's behavior is escalating, and many feel it's only a matter of time before someone ends up dead. It happened again. This afternoon, seven cars were struck during the heart of rush hour. One driver decided enough was enough and decided to take matters into his own hands.
One of the vehicles that was struck was driven, I believe it was a semi. The occupants of that semi actually got out and started chasing the person who was throwing debris.
A trooper who just happened to be in the area saw what was happening. At that point, the suspect gave up and was arrested. Troopers say he's a 31-year-old man from Seattle. This marks the fifth arrest in rock throwing cases, but troopers know there are still perps out there.
We can't just put a trooper on every bit of shoulder, on every overpass, and think that it's going to stop. There's just too much area to try and prevent this from happening.
WSP says they're pouring resources into the issue around the clock, but are facing serious obstacles, with incidents happening at different times in different locations by different suspects. Images like these from this afternoon are starting to become all too common, with 209 rock-throwing freeway cases documented this year in King County, like this one captured on a driver's dash cam Sunday. It's hard for many drivers to not feel on edge.
I mean, it can be rocks, it can be stones, we've heard of bricks, there have been pipes, there have been a propane tank that's been reported to be thrown out, there's been rebar.
Now, a big topic surrounding these cases have been the homeless encampments located near the overpasses where many of the incidents have taken place. Today, after several inquiries, we heard back from the State Department of Transportation, and they say they are clearing those encampments out on Thursday that have now been declared a public safety threat.
Okay, tomorrow, we will get you the very latest. They are due to be cleared on July 22nd. And how about some more arrests? Because this is horrifying. We will be right back with the latest coming up on the MedVed Show. And on the Michael MedVed Show, After surveying the site, this is the site from which the rocks, latest rocks were thrown, seven cars struck. At least one rock thrower is now arrested thanks to the public-spirited and, by the way, brave determination of two of the people who were hit by a debris, stopping their car and then going out and chasing the guy down, making sure he gets arrested. That's a terrific public-spirited act, and good for them. The debris and rock throwing in proximity to specific encampments off I-90 and I-5 is a public safety threat. Well, duh. That we take very seriously and must be addressed immediately, said a statement from Washington State Department of Transportation. Okay, they've had 209 incidents so far this year, and it takes them now to say we're going to take this seriously? After surveying the site with the Washington State Patrol, it was determined the encampment at the Benvenuto viewpoint and another adjacent location to the westbound I-90 off-ramp to Rainier Avenue must be removed. The encampments will be cleared tomorrow, July 22nd, faster than the typical 72-hour notice due to the need to act quickly. Why is there a need to act quickly? There are several reasons. Number one, because there are more people who clearly are thrilled about the publicity that this is getting. It makes people feel powerful. And secondly, because if they don't move quickly, there are a bunch of crazies, including people who are running for mayor, who will rally to support of these bums and this human filth, and it is all of that. They'll rally to their support. No. You haven't found permanent housing for them. And no, it's true, they don't want to go into any kind of shelters where they have to follow rules, but you have to do better than that. You can imagine. In fact, I would imagine that before tomorrow, before they actually clean this out tomorrow, there will be people on the local left who stand up that this kind of thing should be allowed to continue in effect. The City of Seattle will assist with debris removal and provide outreach to the people living in the encampments and offer storage of personal items. Well, that's great. Terrific. Well done. Once removed, the state will work to modify the site to discourage anyone from occupying it. Remember, we were talking yesterday about they say that fences don't work. You can't use fences to keep people out. Now, nobody's talking here about building a great big border wall. But for goodness sake, if you provide some police services and inspection and some very clear barriers that make it more difficult for people to reestablish their encampments, then you're achieving something. Once removed, the state will work to modify the site to discourage anyone from occupying it. How about putting spikes down on it? You know, they're planted deep in the ground. A moat with alligators. I'm only half kidding. And but seriously, if you look at this, and I've seen it, the very site that they're talking about, which is on the off-ramp, when you're going westbound on the I-90 and you get off at Rainier Avenue. And there aren't that many people there. This is not like 50 tents. I don't know, maybe it's 20, 25, something like that. But it's enough to create a world of trouble and a world of hurt. Mayor Jenny Durkan's office issued the following statement yesterday. The city of Seattle is working in partnership with WSDOT, the Washington State Department of Transportation, to address the urgent and serious public safety concerns at multiple encampments along I-90. Seattle and WSDOT are working together to address this public safety issue immediately. While the encampment is on WSDOT property, Seattle Parks has worked with WSDOT to maintain the area over the years through a joint agreement. We are working together to utilize city contracted providers to the individuals living in the encampment and city staff to help with storage, which will be reimbursed by WSDOT. Uh-huh. And there's a flyer with a WSDOT letterhead that apparently is just being distributed today. It says, this is not an authorized area for storage or shelter. All material will be subject to disposal. These encampments have been there for years. They've been there since before the pandemic. The plan to clear the area followed another rock debris throwing incident just before 4 p.m. on Tuesday, which we just heard about. As of Tuesday afternoon, there had been 209 similar incidents in King County this year. Five arrests have been made on those 209 incidents. The whole idea that the way to handle this is spending more money, providing more homeless services. If you're the kind of human being, if you have fallen to the kind of degraded state, really, because an animal wouldn't do that. If you have fallen to the kind of degraded state where you take time off from whatever it is you're doing in your homeless encampment or your panhandling or anything else that you're doing to gather up some debris and throw it onto cars, knowing that you are very likely to, at the very least, damage someone's property and at very likely cause injury or maybe even death. If you have fallen to the level that you're going to do that, what kind of social work is going to help you out? Let's think about it. And the idea that, yes, there are many, many people in these encampments who don't want to leave, who want to continue living there, who insist on continuing living there. This is a problem across the country. And it is this rubbish throwing is getting some unwelcome attention for Seattle. The point is that tolerating the complete breakdown. I'll tell you something else that again, and I know I'm going on this, but I don't think I'm the only one who's deeply disturbed by it. I love many aspects of the International District, used to be called Chinatown International District. The reason it was International District is because before the internment in the war, it had a large Japanese population. So what's happening there? That the efforts to revive and restore that community, which are expensive, have been completely undermined by filthy and omnipresent graffiti on every historic building. Why is it allowed? How do you stop it? 1-800-955-1776. On the Michael Medved Show, there was a letter to the editor in the Seattle Times this morning from Dennis in Seattle. And Dennis Raymond is his name. I mean, he's put his name on the letter for the newspaper, so I don't think we have to keep him anonymous here. He writes, while driving south on Dexter Avenue, crossing Mercer Street, about 10 a.m. on a recent Sunday, I saw a homeless tent city in the southwest quadrant of the intersection, in clear view of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation buildings. Quite a sight to see. While reading about Jeff Bezos' adventures in space at huge expense, how can Seattle King County be home to two of the richest men in the world and a frightening number of homeless people? How can a booming city not be able to house all its residents? How can a proclaimed progressive area not be able to accommodate those in need? What is our legacy? Okay, he knows that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has given away, what is it? It's, I think they've given away a total of $50 billion, maybe more. They have made real progress, saved literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives, fighting disease in Africa and elsewhere, and literally helping starving children. They've also, by the way, Paul Allen did too, may he rest in peace, gave money to protect old growth wilderness, to keep Washington beautiful. And the idea that somehow by them giving more money, these homeless encampments would go away. See, the reason the homeless encampments are there is because we welcome them and we support them. And it's a tragic error beyond belief. And the notion that we're going to somehow take money, how's this going to work? You've got a bunch of people who are mentally ill, seriously mentally ill, and you have no means under current law to have them committed, which is desperately needed, especially when they're involved in criminal activity and they represent a danger to themselves and to others. And the notion that throwing more money at this problem, the total numbers of billions of dollars that have been spent in Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York on homeless services is bizarre. We're doing more to try to accommodate people who actually are worse than down and out. It's not that they're just down on their luck. It's not that everybody's just one paycheck away. It's not true. We are talking about a population that is deeply troubled and profoundly dangerous, frankly. Let's go to Josh in Tacoma. Josh, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hey, how you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing okay.
Hey, good. My comment is just about the graffiti that you had just mentioned a couple of minutes ago. So obviously it's a policy thing where, you know, the laws aren't enforced. I came to Tacoma, Washington about 6 or 7 years ago. And boy, I'll tell you, it's a different Tacoma now than it was even then. But here's my point. When I grew up in Massachusetts, if you got caught spray painting anything on a building, city property, anything like that, you were arrested and you were charged with destruction of property, defacing a property or whatever it would be, you know. I went down to Arizona last year to visit some in-laws, and I realized that there was not a lick of graffiti anywhere around Phoenix. I mean, the major highways, it is beautiful. And I said, I asked my father-in-law, I said, what's up with that? I mean, Tacoma, Seattle's riddled with it. And he said, they make the prison inmates clean the graffiti. Seems to work.
Well, again, that's the one thing that is essential right now. And that actually, if they are going to be spending money on some of this environmental crisis, and it is an environmental crisis with homeless encampments everywhere and graffiti everywhere, they should spend money on regular cleanup crews. I know that's generally what you do. The people who are experts on the taggers, so-called, is apparently you humiliate a tagger if he puts his tag somewhere on the wall and then the next day it's painted over. And again, that could be done. What's so incredible to me, and I've actually spoken to people about what they say, well, it's not clear, is this WSDOT that's responsible or is the city of Seattle? There are a lot of big suburban outside of Seattle and Tacoma cities where the graffiti is far less, and you can see it, and not just more affluent cities like Bellevue, but Everett. I don't believe that Everett, and Jeremy, you're in Everett more often than I am. Everett's not covered with graffiti the way Seattle is it? Plenty of homeless people, but now they're cleaning them up off the streets in Everett. They're doing something about it. And part of the problem here is just the idea, and it's a warped idea, and it should be voted out of every office imaginable, that people somehow have a right to put graffiti up on walls. And I was talking about the International District. And the International District has a lot of historic buildings, and a lot of which have been painstakingly cleaned up and restored. And I know that initially when they started getting graffiti just smeared over the sides of all of these buildings, they made attempts to clean it up. And it's tough because it's up, it's several stories up. And people are risking their lives, I think, to put up some of this graffiti everywhere. But the fact that there's a struggle to keep any small business open. You want to open a Chinese restaurant in the International District? That's a struggle. Is it? Nobody hands you the keys to the kingdom or the money to guarantee your profit. And I feel I know people who are involved with trying to keep downtown Seattle what it should be, which is a vibrant, a place that you enjoy going to. Who enjoys going to a place where you're stepping over drunk homeless people in every doorway, and people who are trying to run a coffee shop or a bakery or a shoe repair shop or anything like that? That's a heroic effort. It is. That's what makes capitalism work. And when you are undermined, when you are attacked by people who basically are trying to take possession of your public space, it's something that, honestly, it should be the issue in this election. It's not who can send the most money to the homeless on the street and the people in the encampments. Because you know what? There's a basic law of human nature. If you pay for something and you keep paying for it and you keep paying for it and you pay more and more and more and more, you're going to get more and more of it. And that's been basically what we're doing with the homeless situation. There is no excuse other than pathetic leadership and a misplaced compassion for the fact that we have, at this moment in our country's history, we're basically, yes, we had interruptions during the pandemic, but for goodness sake, there are so many job opportunities, so many options for people who actually do want to get ahead in this economy. To just say the only thing we can do about the homeless is keep sending money their direction is basically insane, and it's deeply destructive. There's a new poll that may shock you about the presidency in 2024 coming up. Michael Medved show. I mentioned that there is a poll that has been getting some attention. It's one of those things that is put forward as a shock poll. Why and how is it a shock poll? Because it asks questions about the presidential race of 2024. And many people believe that they know for sure that the presidential race of 2024 is going to be somebody versus Donald Trump. In other words, it is not at all sure that Joe Biden is going to be running for re-election, nor is it a sure thing that if he doesn't run for re-election, that Kamala Harris, who's had a rocky time, I think it's safe to say, as vice president, nor is it a sure thing at all that Kamala Harris would be the replacement for Joe Biden. But this poll featured in Mediaite says, shock poll, majority of Republican voters say fresh face would be stronger than Trump in 2024, a 33-point swing since April. And the story says the number of Republican voters who say a fresh face would be a stronger candidate than former President Donald Trump to defeat Joe Biden in 2024, has surged since April, with a solid majority now saying that a different GOP candidate stands a better chance against Biden. Now, I would be surprised if there aren't a bunch of people out there who say, yeah, this relates to me. I voted for Trump, but I think that the Republicans have a better chance of winning back the White House and winning back the House of Representatives and winning back the Senate, all of which were lost under Trump's watch, has a better chance with somebody else. In a new poll of Republican primary voters, respondents were asked, since former President Trump's popularity has dropped with voters since the 2020 election, would you agree or disagree that a new Republican candidate, a fresh face, would be a stronger candidate to defeat Joe Biden in 2024? Just over a third, 36% of GOP primary voters say Trump would be the stronger candidate, while 52% say a fresh face would be stronger. As the poll notes, that's a massive swing since the last poll in April. In other words, when they asked the same kind of question a couple of months ago, there was 33% more support for Trump and a third less, a similar support less for the unidentified fresh face. The numbers actually show that back in April, there were 50% of primary voters said Trump would be the strongest candidate to defeat Biden, while only 36% said another candidate would be stronger. So why this shift? Well, first of all, I don't know how they asked the question in April, but this is obviously, and you got to admit it, it's a biased question the way they asked it. And when they ask this by saying, since former President Trump's popularity has dropped with voters since the 2020 election, by the way, that's incontestably true, would you agree or disagree that a new Republican candidate, a fresh face, would be a stronger candidate to defeat Joe Biden? Without the prelude, if they hadn't asked us in view of the fact that the support for Trump has dropped, that sort of is a leading question, isn't it? The other thing about this survey that they don't really explain, they say in the story in Mediaite, but the same poll shows Trump blowing away the current field of GOP hopefuls, even as he generates less than 50% support. He leads his next competitor, who is? Who do you think? It's Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. He leads Ron DeSantis by over 30 points, 45.8% to 13%, with no other candidate cracking double digits. I'll tell you why I think people who look at this and say, yeah, but Trump's a sure winner. He's got 45%. Ron DeSantis has 13%. He's the only one who's even in double digits. Other people are Mike Pence, 6%, Ted Cruz, 5%, Nikki Haley, 5%, Marco Rubio, 3%, Kristi Noem, 1%, and Tim Scott and Josh Hawley, less than 1%. Okay, the point about this, and the reason that I think that the poll is useful, is that particularly after some of the extremes of the Biden administration and the current fight over even just getting an infrastructure bill done and the Republican determination, which I think is admirable, to preventing America from harming itself very severely and harming our economic future and the future of our government's effectiveness and all of it, doing that with spending on such an irresponsible basis. With all of that, there's going to be a very, very great hunger for Republicans to field a successful ticket in 2024. There's always a hunger for that. But this time, the idea of the imperative of delivering America from Democratic control of the House. I hope that gets done in 2022. Democratic control of the Senate. That it's going to be tougher to do in 2022, but it's also possible. And then to return the White House to Republican hands. The idea that that's going to work easily with Donald Trump, given the fact that he has done everything he can to inspire controversy. He's having a meeting, I think it's this week, with a bunch of candidates who are challenging Liz Cheney. He has already committed himself. There are about 20 Republican office holders, many of them conservatives, who Trump is determined to spend his time and effort to try to unseat and to contest in primaries. If nothing else, this is not a way for him to win broad United Party support. There's no party in history that has succeeded by dividing itself and fighting its own members. And you don't succeed in party purges. The only party that's really known for purging members who disagreed with some of the leadership is the Communist Party in Stalin's Russia. Come on. The idea that Republicans can't even work with other Republicans, people with 80 and 90% American Conservative Union voting records, this is not something that speaks well for some of the challenges ahead. And some of the challenges, of course, include just dealing with some of the Democratic agenda. And look, Biden is actually handing Republicans a great opportunity because he had gotten elected as somebody who was going to get us back to normal and things were going to be healed and we were going to calm down and politics would be less apocalyptic. And then he says things like changes, very minor changes in voting regulations in a few states as the most grievous threat to our democracy since the Civil War. It's outrageous. That's the kind of rhetoric that, honestly, I think the American people were voting against during the campaign. And it's frankly the kind of rhetoric that I think it's very important that Republicans avoid as well. There is a tweet of the day that gives you an example of the kind of rhetoric that should be avoided. Can we do that tweet of the day? All right, we will do the tweet of the day coming up. It's, again, aligning the Republican Party with, well, lining it up with apartheid South Africa. Is that fair? Now, who would say such a thing? We'll let you keep guessing, and we will get to it. We will also get to more on another Olympic series of Olympic controversies, one involving bikini bottoms. Why? Well, because somehow for a beach handball team, not volleyball, beach handball, the regulation uniform does not call for shorts. We will get to this and to many more important issues, including the latest on the vaccines, the pandemic, and the future of this greatest nation on God's green earth.